This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture with me, Lee Chui Lin. Lupus, like many other autoimmune disorders, appears mysterious and little understood. Shining a light on it today is Dr. Benjamin Chia, who's president of the SLE Foundation Malaysia, and Steph Lim, who is a lupus patient, and they are going to give us a view from both sides. So, Dr. Chia, to start us off with, what is lupus erythematosus?
Right. So, it's SLE for short, or lupus for short. SLE means systemic lupus erythematosus. Systemic means that it affects almost every body system. It can affect almost every body system. And lupus is actually a Latin word for wolf. In ancient times, they used to think that this disease was caused by a bite from a wolf, and hence they get the classical facial rash, and that almost resembles the fur patterns of a wolf. Erythematosus means inflammation, so it's a systemic inflammation.
So this isn't an illness that, for instance, HIV is a relatively newly discovered illness. Is lupus the same, or have there been cases observed in the past?
Well, it's difficult to answer that question, but it's probably been around for a very long time. A lot of even people without lupus, basically lupus is an autoimmune disease, so what I mean by autoimmune is the body's immune system attacks itself. We know that the body's immune system is meant to defend us from bacteria and viruses, but in this instance, it actually renegades on itself. Why it does that, we do not know. In every individual being, there may be some degree of autoimmune cells, but usually the body's system keeps it in check, so it does not cause much problems. But in patients with SLE, it starts to cause damage to some of the body systems, and therefore the patient feels unwell.
Aside from SLE, what are the other different types of lupus? Because as I understand it, it's divided into a number of categories.
I might not want to break it up into categories. First of all, lupus has a variety of presentation. And that's what makes it so challenging. It can present as vague as just having a prolonged fever or some joint pain, or as severe as even having seizures and being hospitalized in hospital. So it can affect, it really depends on which organ system that is affected. But one of the most common organ systems that are affected would be the skin, because that's clearly the most visible to everyone else, or and to the patient, him or herself.
Steph, when did your symptoms first begin to manifest, and what were they?
Well, at that point in time, I didn't know they were symptoms, you know, because I didn't know what lupus was as well, as I'm sure many of the listeners, you know, are the same today. So basically 4 or 5 years ago, I developed many, many bruises on my legs, up and down my body. And I thought they were normal because I'm quite a tomboy and do crazy, daring things that I shouldn't. A lot of my friends were telling me that I dropped a lot of hair, you know, and then vein ma. So panic lah, you know, I was like, why is my hair dropping? But I figured, okay, because, you know, you have long hair and it happens. And then one night I was out to dinner with friends. This was in 2010, I believe. We were just having dinner, and I developed a little bit of gastric, what I thought was gastric, and a really high fever that sort of shot up and wouldn't stop. So it was very dramatic. It was 3 a.m., it was storming, and thankfully for caring, naggy friends, they pushed me to go to the hospital. So I did, and they did a series of blood tests, and the doctor was sure it was appendicitis. And he was like, okay, we're wheeling you into the operating theatre now. And I panicked, because I was like, I'm not going under the knife, you know. So they were on the way, you know, they were wheeling me in, and then suddenly he said, stop, don't, because it's not your white blood cell count, it's your platelets that's really, really low. So a normal person has between 120 to 400,000, right, doc? And I had about 20,000 or something like that. So, yeah, that was obviously bad news, and that's how it started. That's how I knew, yeah.
And, you know, Dr. Chia, like, Is this how people usually present to you? I mean, what is the tipping point for people to see a doctor generally? Because as you mentioned, a lot of the symptoms are very vague. I mean, I agree with Steph. If I had, you know, strange bruises or a fever, I may not necessarily think I need to go see a doctor, much less a specialist.
And that's a challenge always, because a lot of the symptoms are actually very vague. So initially, when you do have fever or some joint pain or even bruises, you may think that it's nothing out of the ordinary. Hopefully, it will go away and it will never come back again. But the clue is always if it persists. So we don't expect every doctor that you see will check you for lupus. I mean, that would not be right either. So I think if the problem persists, then it's something that they would have to think of. And it's interesting that obviously it affects, I mean, who it affects, I think has a bearing on how they seek health-seeking behavior. It does affect the behaviors. It does affect people in the prime of their lives. So people with the world at their feet, with a lot of things to look forward to, thinking that they'll probably not get sick. So it can affect them during their teenage years up until their 40s, 50s. And it affects a lot more females than males. The ratio is actually 9 to 1, which means that for every 9 female, every male patient, there are actually 9 female patients. And it can be sometimes very depressing if it affects, for example, the skin, or if you do get excessive hair loss. It can sometimes be quite distressing to the patient.
I can completely relate to that. And you were talking there about the people who are at risk of SLE. Are there also people for whom it is more serious, you know, people who react to it worse?
I think from the racial standpoint, certainly Asians tend to have a more severe form of the disease in a sense that they do get more internal organ involvement, the kidneys, the brain, the blood systems, as in Steph's case, and rather than just purely the skin or the joints. The other group that has very severe lupus are the African Americans. I think it's also important to understand that Asians present very differently. Unfortunately, a lot of research prior to this has been done in Caucasian populations, and sometimes the way it responds to treatment, the way it behaves, may be actually quite different. So I think I think a lot of focus now in newer research projects, actually including more and more Asian patients.
And how common is SLE in Malaysia?
There's no official statistic, so the answer to that is we don't know. But we would say that there are probably maybe about 20,000 people with the disease. Having said that, there might be a lot more who are undiagnosed or may have a problem and not know that they actually have a problem until it becomes more severe.
Yeah. And with that being said, what kind of work does the SLE Foundation do?
Right, the name is actually Persatuan SLE Malaysia, or the Malaysian SLE Association. It's a non-governmental organization that's run by volunteers. And these are either patients themselves or family members of patients who sacrifice their time to organize workshops, to organize forums, and to educate the public, to be a support, to form support groups for patients. I think a lot of times when a patient gets diagnosed with SLE, there's actually no one to turn to. Whatever you read, even on the internet, tends to be quite confusing. And it forms, so the SLE Association forms a good support group where they can actually have patients or fellow patients talk to them and actually guide them along the process of recovery. And I think that's very important. We also have an SLE fund, and what the SLE fund does, it hopes to provide some sort of financial support for patients who may require surgery. Need for surgery is due to complications relating to some of the treatments that are being given.
And Steph, you know, when you received your diagnosis or, mm-hmm. you know, after that, do you know many other people with lupus?
No, at that point in time, no, I didn't. But a year after that, I found out that two of my cousins have it, and their symptoms are totally different. Totally different. One of them had a rash, vertigo, mini stroke, you know, so very different symptoms, I think. And then after that, of course, you know, people started coming out of the woodwork, I think because they knew I had it. So we would talk, and that's great, you know. And in fact, I just found out another friend. I mean, misdiagnosis is a really important thing to emphasize, I think, because a good friend of mine 2 years ago, she was misdiagnosed with having arthritis. And she had lupus, and she passed away. So, you know, you just got to do the right tests and make sure you get a second opinion or get the right opinion.
And since then, you know, with more conversations with people who have lupus, do you find it helpful to be around people who, you know, understand what you're going through?
It's funny you say that, because I think the timing was perfect when I got it, because I've got this really great bunch of friends, and they're very supportive, and of course my family was very supportive, and you know, it was like being treated like a queen la for a year and a half. But yeah, it's very important, communication, interaction, because when I first googled lupus, it was like, oh, it's a very depressing disease and you're going to need people, and I didn't quite fathom what that meant. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's one thing to know the symptoms, to deal with the symptoms. It's another to then deal with the medication process, you know, and you need good friends.
And yeah. That's what we'll be getting into after this. I'm speaking to Steph Lim, who is a lupus patient, and Dr. Benjamin Chia, who is the president of the Malaysian SLE Association. And we're talking about lupus from both sides on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture with me, Lee Chui Lin, and joining me today is Dr. Benjamin Chia, who's president of the Malaysian SLE Association, and Steph Lim, who's a lupus patient. And we're trying to kind of pin down this very wide-ranging disease called lupus. So we've talked quite a lot about how the different symptoms can manifest. You know, Dr. Chia, you gave us an overview. Steph, you told us what happened to you. But why can symptoms affect so many different parts of the body?
Well, it's because it's a systemic disease, and it's basically your body's immune system, and your body's immune system is present throughout your body. Why it affects people differently and why it affects different organs in different people, I believe that it's got something to do with your genetics as well. And there are a lot of research going into genetics, and we do know that there is an association with genetics. So if you have an a family member with an autoimmune disease, there you are adding an increased risk of getting some form of autoimmune disease. So therefore, that's the challenge of it. I mean, it can present in such a variety of ways. But one of the most common involvement is perhaps the kidneys. And quite a lot of patients do develop problems to their kidneys, and that can be quite silent. And therefore, it's actually extremely important that you follow up with your doctors regularly, who will then check you for will check your urine to make sure that there is no abnormal protein or blood in your urine, because you wouldn't know that sometimes. And by the time you do develop problems, it might have done irreversible damage to your kidneys. They're the most common organ that can be affected is the brain. And it can present anything from headaches right up to seizures, depression. So that's the challenge of it. I mean, that's such a variety, and hence a lot of times the diagnosis is delayed.
So these multiple symptoms have given rise to even, you know, pop culture references such as what we're going to hear right now.
Excuse me. You stash your drugs in a lupus textbook. It's never lupus.
Happen in lupus. Increased platelet count can cause blood clots.
ANA was negative. It's not lupus.
Hallucinations are a symptom of psychosis, which is the fourth diagnostic criteria. It's official. This is lupus.
Treat him for lupus.
I think your son has lupus.
Hemolytic anemia doesn't cause liver damage.
Add the fact he's coughing blood. You've got three of the indicators of organ-threatening lupus.
It's moving too fast.
It's lupus.
There's no need to get snippy. This kind of lupus takes years to get to this point. It's been a week.
I don't think this is lupus.
It's lupus. Come on, let's just go.
Your fourth diagnostic criterion of lupus is psychosis. This is just a kid missing his cat.
Lupus could cause...
No. Lupus progresses slower. There'd be joint pain.
So it's not a typical case. We should get an ANA.
Exocrine function's normal. Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's a systemic cancer which her dwarfism predisposes her to.
You have any ideas that aren't cancer?
Cancer fits.
Autoimmune fits better. We should treat her with prednisone for lupus.
Here.
You really think he's got Hep B?
No. I think lupus is way more likely.
All right, then let's start him on IV cytoxin and plasmapheresis.
If it's not cancer infection, it has to be autoimmune. Systemic lupus, complicated by a CNS vasculitis, would explain the rash, fever, ascites.
Parasites or fungus is possible.
Or maybe lupus. Grandma has lupus.
Lupus could cause lung scarring and a rash. It's lupus-induced kidney failure. For lupus nephritis.
It's lupus.
Lupus.
And it's not lupus. Lupus is a bad diagnosis. It's not lupus.
Autoimmune diseases can make antibodies go haywire, but still...
It's happened. Apparently it's happened again. I finally had a case of lupus.
So the tagline, it's not lupus or it's never lupus, came from the popular TV show House MD. There are t-shirts, there are taglines. Why? So is lupus easily mistook for other things in the medical profession?
I think there are two messages to take from that tagline. I think the first would be, firstly, lupus can present in so many ways. But having said that, don't attribute everything to lupus. So you can't be too paranoid that you have a fever. After listening to the show, you have a fever for a week and you say you have lupus. That's obviously not true most of the time. I think the second message from that is that it can present in such a variety of ways. And I think for the medical students who are listening out there, you probably wouldn't be wrong if you would say that it might be lupus, and I don't think people can say that you're wrong. So it's probably a safe answer to give.
On the bright side, you know, life isn't a TV show that's focused on rare diseases, so you know, lupus is always a possibility. And so, Doctor, earlier you mentioned how. Due to the fact that it's a systemic disease, it can go anywhere, it can be anything. Let's break it down a little. So can you tell us how it affects the neurological system in particular?
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the presentation of lupus. As I mentioned earlier, it can present as simple as just a headache that, you know, by just taking regular painkillers doesn't really go away, and you get it for prolonged periods of time, to a very severe psychiatric illness. So from depression, being mania as well, to seizures. So we do get a lot of, even strokes for that matter. So we do get a lot of patients who do present at one end of the spectrum. And a lot of these patients who present with headaches tend to get misdiagnosed with, for example, migraines. So they would think that they have migraines. So they've been having migraines for years and years and years. And they've been taking a lot of painkillers. Doesn't go away until some fine day, perhaps a doctor decides to check you for lupus before they actually realize that they actually have lupus. What happens is there are a few possibilities. One of it is, I think, in the clip that you played just now, it's what we call a CNS vasculitis. So it's actually vessel inflammation. And this is the body creating antibodies attacking the blood vessels that supply the brain. And when the blood supply is affected, that's when you develop problems. So I think this is one of the... pathophysiology of SLE lupus, one of the main reasons why ways of how lupus actually attacks the brain.
And what is involved in making your diagnosis, in making a definitive diagnosis of lupus? Because, you know, for instance, Steph might have gone to surgery if somebody hadn't looked at her blood.
Well, it's always a combination of what the patient complains and certainly what we find from the blood laboratory or investigation results. So usually we would ensure that the patient would have some problem. Usually they'll present either with a rash or with hair loss or maybe with some evidence of what we call skin vasculitis or even bruising. And when you do check the blood investigations, it is supportive of lupus. And one of the blood investigations that are usually checked is a antibody we call anti-nuclear antibody. It's actually an antibody against your genetic material. So it's an anti-nuclear antibody. So the caveat is, obviously, now there are quite a lot of private laboratories who are offering this test as part of a screening package for patients who are perfectly healthy. And a lot of times we get referrals where the anti-nuclear antibody is positive. And the patient would have thought that he or she has lupus, but we do know that a lot of patients without lupus have a positive anti-nuclear antibody. What that means, we do not know. Will they develop lupus many years later on? We do not know that. We do know that there's some presence of the antibody, but we would not say that this patient has lupus. So usually we'll try and reassure them and say that you do not have lupus at this time, but perhaps you'd like an annual follow-up to see how you're doing, or if you feel unwell, perhaps you should come back again.
So there are still a lot of areas that need to be researched and discovered.
Definitely.
Steph, so was that your official diagnosis? Did it happen at that point in time, you know, or were there more tests and more, you know, just more investigation?
Yeah, so I went in, you know, that fateful July night in 2010. And then I was hospitalized for 3 weeks. They didn't know what was wrong. They just knew my platelets were low. And after about 2 weeks, I think they diagnosed me with lupus. And then they started pumping me with steroids, you know, because steroids is the champion, you know, medicine of heroes, right? And werewolves. So it was interesting. Yeah, when you're that high, you don't realize anything is wrong. But, you know, after, yeah, I mean that's how they found out. I think after running numerous tests and bone marrow taps and blood tests and urine tests, that's how they found out.
We have a question from a listener. Nicole is asking, can Bell's palsy or shingles be a form of lupus presentation?
Well, it's I think shingles is an infection where it's usually a herpes zoster infection. I would say it's not your usual presentation of lupus. Having said that, a lot of patients with lupus may have shingles, and the reason is because they have been given medications that suppresses their immune system. And when the immune system is suppressed, that's when shingles may occur.
Because you become prone to infection.
Yes, that's right.
We are welcoming questions from listeners. Do feel free to SMS 0162019000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Steph, so we were talking about your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. How did it change your life, finding out that you had lupus? Because obviously, you know, in the preparation for this interview, I, like you, Googled lupus. And I agree that were I to be reading that, it can be disheartening.
Yeah. Yeah, I think to get educated is really important, especially when it concerns you, right? So you got to make some initiative there. And I had plenty of time because I had to quit my job. So Googling, I'm major fans of the Malaysian Lupus Foundation, the American Lupus Foundation, New York Lupus Foundation, and, you know, you just sort of gather information from there. Yeah, so how has it changed my life? I think quite significantly, lah. So as I said, you can't have I couldn't be in advertising anymore, you know, because that's like, you know, going, just challenging yourself or throwing yourself off the edge, right? Because it's one of the most stressful industries in my opinion.
Too many hours of the day.
Yeah, that's right. So I had to quit my job. I had to take better care of myself. Because of steroids, for all the women out there, you go from a, well, I went from a size 8 to a size 18 in 2 weeks. So I couldn't roll out of bed and I couldn't fit into my clothes. And these are the things you'll face. You know, you just got to roll along with it. Eat your 10 meals a day because that's the kind of cravings you're going to get. You know, and just taper your steroid use slowly. Don't cut it off completely, you know, because that's bad. From personal experience, just listen to your doctor and taper it down slowly and you'll be fine, you know.
Dr. Chia, on that note, you know, we have to ask you about treatment because SLE has no cure. Yes. Although the prognosis has improved drastically over the last, you know, century, you know, even the last 20 years. But there are ways to manage the condition. So steroids being amongst them, what can you tell us about this?
Well, it's always a challenge asking patients to be on steroids. So a lot of patients would have read about all the side effects of steroids. So you get what we call the moon face. So you get rounder. Basically, you put on abnormal fat distribution. Your skin may change. And certainly your appearance will change. Mm. And there's a lot of other effects of steroids as well, which are actually clearly unseen. But I think what is important is to weigh the benefit and the risk.
Yeah.
Certainly, if we let lupus run loose, it can cause irreversible damage to your organs, and therefore the side effects of steroids may be an acceptable trade-off. And bear in mind that a lot of times, once we do taper the steroids down, it tends to be a lot of effects tends to be reversible. So it's very important. Steroids are a good drug, so it does help to control the immune system very quickly and very effectively. Usually, the general rule is we will try and use steroids for the shortest possible duration at the lowest possible dose, if that is possible for the patient. So there are other medications that we can use. Let's say if the patient really requires steroids, every time we reduce the dose of steroids, he or she becomes unwell. Then there's a role of other medicines which it suppresses the immune system as well. But without all the side effects of steroids, it may take a little bit longer for some of these medications, but it allows the dose of steroids to be reduced. So steroids is one of the backbone drugs that are used in lupus. But one of the most important advice for lupus patients is actually avoiding sun, in particular UV light. So the reason we advise that is because when your skin is exposed to UV light, it gets damaged. And when it gets damaged, it releases genetic material. And a lot of times you get an exaggerated immune response. And that's why you get that facial rash. It's because there's an immune response towards damage to your skin cells. I mean, a lot of us have been out in the sun, and sometimes you do get sunburn. And that's a severe form of skin damage to UV light. So it's extremely important to advise patients to use sunblocks. Try and avoid going out during a period when
the sun is at its brightest.
The UV intensity is at its highest.
Wear a hat.
Wear a hat, use an umbrella, sunblocks, all these will need to be used. And it's also important to know that doesn't mean it's cloudy, there's no UV light, because UV, the ultraviolet rays penetrates clouds easily. So it's very important to always bear this in mind, that they will need to practice these measures.
So is it going to be a lifelong management of disease by medication then?
It's definitely going to be a lifelong disease. Some patients may be lucky enough that they may either require no treatment or even very minimal treatment, and they will be well for a very, very long time. And some patients will actually will be on higher doses of medications for the entire lives. Lupus actually, it doesn't always remain the same. It comes and goes. So it's only when it comes that we actually need to control the immune system before it does damage.
Right.
And most of the time, it will wane by itself, and it's when we'll try and reduce your medication and see if the patient remains well.
Steph, psychologically, you know, knowing that this is something that you were going to have to deal with for a very, very long time, mm-hmm. you know, how have you just gotten used to that? Or, you know, is it... Because, and you talked about tapering down the steroids, so obviously yeah. you're an involved person in your treatment. Mm-hmm. How has that been? You know, how has it been educating yourself, involving yourself? What has it involved? What does it need?
Okay, it's been quite a journey getting here. I won't say that it hasn't. You know, like I was saying earlier, you have to deal with the symptoms of the disease. As Dr. Chia very eloquently puts it, you know, lupus is kind of like a volcano, and you got to take measures to stop it from erupting. And then, of course, you got to control your medication, because steroids has got a lot of side effects, right? So the weight gain, the constant eating, the not being able to sleep, the 10 mood swings a day, you know. So you got to sort of accommodate that in your lifestyle. And that's what I sort of realized through a lot of practice, you know. So I quit my job, which was great. It was a great blessing, because then I started my own business. And that's going wonderfully. You know, and you stop learning, you stop sweating the small stuff. And I think whether you have lupus or not, people should just stop doing that. You start prioritizing the things in life you want to do and want to focus on. You know, so you become a better planner for your day, because you only have that much energy, and then you crash and feel really tired for the next 18 hours, right? So learning how to prioritize what you want to do in life and who you want to spend your life and your time with, I think, yeah.
And how would you advise, you know, fellow lupus patients to get involved in the process? Because I think even in this day and age, we do have many people who still believe that doctors are the voice of God. You know, I tell you to do it, and then you go off and do it, and maybe next time you come back, you tell me something and we'll change something. But there isn't much involvement. There isn't always a lot of, you know, understanding of how much this will change their life, and therefore how much they really need to communicate to their doctors.
Right. That's a tricky one, isn't it?
Were you very communicative with your doctors?
Well, yeah, I mean, they were very good doctors. I mean, they were very helpful, and they kind of helped me figure it out. But I guess because my symptoms manifested visually. So, you know, you can kind of see the hair loss and the bruises and all that. And it was kind of obvious, I guess, you know. Just through talking to people. Talking to lots of different people who will then help you do research as well. Yeah, you know, no excuse, lah. Because you've got Twitter and you've got Instagram and you've got Facebook, so...
Spend some time on Google as well.
Right. Exactly.
Dr. Chia, do you think it's important for patients to be, you know, involved in the whole process?
I think education is very important. Knowing the disease will certainly equip you to last the pace, so to say. And I think this year the motto for the World Lupus Day is quite apt. It says, don't give up. Because it's a lifelong battle. I would say it's a lifelong war, and there are many battles in between. And some of these patients are unlucky enough to have very frequent battles, sometimes non-stop battles. They win one battle, they go into another battle. And it's just sometimes it can put a strain not only on their lives, on the lives of their family members. And I think thinking about these patients, I think it's the reason why the tagline was thought out to be such, don't give up. It is a controllable disease. It's working with your doctors, trying hard to understand. I mean, it's not an easy disease to explain. Even doctors don't understand it well enough. I mean,
it's never lupus.
Yeah, it's never lupus. In actual fact, the fact that we don't know what causes it, whether it's genetics, even there is an association with pollution to autoimmunity. So with the increasing pollution that we are facing nowadays, could it give rise to increased incidence of lupus? Maybe. So the thing is, sometimes no one really has the right answers.
Or at least not yet.
Not yet. I think there's a lot of research. And when a disease doesn't have many answers, that's the fear of a lot of these patients are being manipulated. So it's a lot of misinformation. So someone will come to you and tell you, oh, take this pill and it will cure you of lupus. And because of the fact that these patients are vulnerable, they actually believe. I mean, it's better, there's no harm taking a risk. After all, the doctor said that that's no cure for it. So that's one of the challenges that sometimes we do tell patients, stick with us, tell us what you have. I do understand some practices are quite busy, where you hardly have any time, and to actually talk to your doctors. And I think this is where the association comes in, where you can actually sit down. I think we have a monthly share and care session, where you can actually sit down and talk to fellow patients, and we have trained counselors to chair these sessions, and it will take a load off your shoulders.
We've covered today, the symptoms, the treatment, the possible consequences of said treatment. The last thing that I'm curious in the last step is, so you've diagnosed SLE, you've begun to treat it. How many heightened screenings? You know, how do the screenings for your health heighten after your diagnosis? Because for the rest of us, you know, I suppose it's your annual blood test, you hop on the scale, you know, you do all these things. But for a lupus patient, is it different?
Well, I think a lot of times we will follow up these patients very closely, perhaps even every three to six months, depending on how stable their condition is. Because a lot of times they can actually appear quite well, but on closer examination, you may actually realize that lupus is active, and if you allow it to continue, it might actually flare or even cause problems to these patients. So definitely, it's going to be a very regular affair of visiting and visiting your doctors, and it's very important to do so.
Steph, how vigilant have you become about your health since your diagnosis?
Way more vigilant, I think. Mainly because I wasn't very vigilant at all, to be honest. Late nights, lots of hours spent under the sun, shuttling from meeting to meeting, being a workaholic, all that good stuff, and you have to change all that, right? So, yeah, my life has changed 360. You know, now I plan my work, better. You know, I eat better. I bought a juicer the other day, for goodness sakes. And
that's a big step.
Yes, having to go to the gym, things like that. But no, it's great. And if you manage it right, you go back to normal life very quickly, So,
and it's something that can happen.
It is. I mean, like, now I see my doctor maybe every 3 months. It used to be every week. So it's great.
It's a step-by-step process. It is. As much as anything else.
That's right. And you just have to be patient, I think. Yeah.
Okay. And my final question to both of you would be, what message would you like to leave us with on the subject of SLE or lupus?
Well, I think important is if a doctor ever tells you that you have lupus, there's always help available. Never give up. Get your family members involved, because I think it's very important that you have a good social network. And this goes for, in actual fact, almost every chronic disease there is. I mean, you really need a good social network and support. And as the saying goes, never give up. I mean, you can actually lead a normal life. You can get pregnant. You can start your family. It's not a problem. And that's probably the most positive note that you can give your patient.
It doesn't turn you into a werewolf.
No.
It's quite disappointing, but it doesn't. you have nothing to be afraid of. Just find out as much as you can, about the symptoms if you have it. Or you can tweet me anytime now, and I'll answer questions. And there are many caring people out there willing to help if you're willing to ask for it, I think. Yeah.
And And as part of Persatuan SLE Malaysia's fundraising event, they'll be hosting a musical charity show on June 22nd, and it's titled Moon Speaks for My Heart, and those of us who know the famous song will know that it's about the life of Teresa Teng. All tickets are tax-exempted, and proceeds are to fund activities including forums, newsletters, helplines, counselling services, and an SLE fund. Tickets are available via the Secretariat, and more information is available at www.lupusmalaysia.org. Thank you both so much for joining me today. Thank you for having us. I've been speaking to Dr. Benjamin Chia, who's the president of the Malaysian SLE Association, and Steph Lim, who's a lupus patient. We've been discussing the tricky disease that is lupus on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Selamat petang, selamat petang, tuan-tuan dan puan-puan. Inilah edisi petang di Radio BFM. Apa khabar semua? Cuaca hari ini mendung-mendung dan mendung. Kalau hujan, berhati-hati di jalan raya. Itu dia Gwen Stefani. Dan dia bukan sebarang gadis ya, tuan-tuan dan puan-puan. Dia bukan bos ya, dan sudah tentu, dia bukan hollaback girl.
Tired of the same old, same old? Searching for a fresh sound? Well, you found it. Just tune into the evening edition with me, Caroline O, Ezra Zayed, and Uma Pagan Ampike Pagan every weekday from 5 p.m.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey, BFM 89.9.
Will you marry me?
I want to, but...
Look, with a minimum deposit of 3,000 ringgit, I'll get a chance to win the SSB special draw worth 1 million ringgit.
1 million? Let's get married!
Save now and stand a chance to win SSB worth 1 million ringgit in the SSB special draw until December 2013. The longer you save, the greater your chances of winning. Visit mybsn.com.my or any BSN branch. Terms and conditions apply. BSN, your community bank.
From posh dining experiences to a dirty, noisy food court,
or even when you're home alone,
we're always ready when you get hungry. Feeding time with Faye Koo, Saturdays, 12 p.m.
Business Focused Moments, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.